welcome to the latest edition of the Office Block podcast with me, Paul Dillon.
And me, Anne-Marie Butler.
We're speaking to you today in the midst of the white heat of a general election campaign. In this podcast, we're going to be focusing on two issues which are highly topical. How do we get a better work-life balance? And what can be done to create work that is genuinely flexible and built around the needs of workers and society and not exclusively employers?
We'll also be talking about the campaign to stop the rise in the pension age, which has become a key election issue thanks to the Stop 67 campaign.
And so we're joined by two guests who certainly know their subjects, who know their directives from their policies, from their legislation, from their ministerial orders, or their marching orders for that matter. Gareth Murphy is the head of industrial relations and campaigns with the Financial Services Union and has been involved in FSU campaigns on work-life balance and flexible work. Annettle Buckley is SIPDU Deputy General Secretary and she has spearheaded the campaign to protect the pension age. You're both very welcome on the show.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
And our poll this month is, does your employer do enough to create a fair work-life balance? That poll is now live on the Office Block on Facebook and the OB tweets on Twitter. Drop us a message at any time with feedback or suggestions for shows.
First, we'll go to pensions. Pensions have become a hot issue in the general election campaign. Ethel, can you describe the backdrop to the Stop 67 campaign?
The backdrop to the Stop 67 campaign is a rise in the qualifying age for the state pension. So in Ireland, a piece of legislation was enacted in 2011 that provides for state pension age, so the age that you get the state pension as opposed to your occupational pension, a rise in the qualifying age to 66, and that happened in 2014, to 67 on New Year's Day in 2021, and to 68 on New Year's Day in 2028. So the problem with that is that a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people have a retirement age for work in their work contract, their employment contract of 65. So there's now a gap between when you retire from work and when you qualify for the state pension. And that's become a real problem for people. I mean, as trade unionists, we knew back in 2011 it was going to be a problem. But now we can hear from the people who have actually gone through that experience. And what the spokespersons for Stop 67 are saying is that it is not acceptable, after working all of your life, expecting to get your pension and state pension at 65, that you have to go sign on the dole. A lot of these people would have never been in a dole office before, but that's what they're required to do now. You have to go and sign on the dole and sign on for job seekers benefit. So for the first 9 months, you get job seekers benefit, but for the last 3 months of the 12 months currently, you get job seekers allowance. And the problem with that is that it's means tested. So if you have somebody else in the house working, like your spouse or your partner or your kids, that income is taken into account. If you have savings, that's taken into account, the value of your home. And I'm not talking, SIPDU members are not rich people. These are not people of means. These are ordinary working people who have had their pensions vastly reduced by the means testing. And the problem now is, it's been bad enough for the 12 months from 65 to 66, but the government plans to take it to 67 on New Year's Day. So we're going to have 24 months of this gap. And it's been a huge issue in our union for a long time. And we've dealt with it industrially, generally, you know, representing individual workers and members with their employer. But we now want we want a legislative solution to this. So the Stop 67 campaign is calling for repeal of the section of the legislation that will take state pension age to 67 on the 1st of January and 68 in 2028. That's the first demand of the campaign. Don't make the situation worse. It's bad enough. Don't make it doubly worse. And then the next major demand is that we want a stakeholder forum involving trade unions centrally, involving SIPDU centrally, but also involving the employers and civil society. So we have made a coalition with the National Women's Council. It's the biggest feminist organisation in the country. And women are disproportionately affected by the state pension issue because of very low levels of occupational pension coverage amongst women in Ireland. So the National Women's Council and the two big NGOs representing older and retired people, Age Action and Active Retirement Ireland. And we want we don't want a consultation. Let's just be really clear about this, because this has now become part of the debate in the general election. Fianna Fáil is saying, we'll give them a commission. No, you know what? We don't want a commission. We want social dialogue. We want a negotiation. We don't want to be consulted and then told we're going to do this anyway. We want real social dialogue like takes place in other European Union and developed countries, where employers and unions sit down and negotiate, dealing with the facts of the issue. There's so many myths about pensions, that we're all getting older faster. Actually, we're the youngest country in the European Union. We have more people under 15 and over 65 than any other country. So this time bomb is a myth, really. And also, we have to really open up the discussion in this country, I believe, on the level of employer contribution to the social insurance fund. So workers in the Republic of Ireland pay about the average of the EU worker into their social insurance protection. But employers in Ireland pay a fraction of the EU average. So that has to come into the discussion about a suitable age for state pension. And when I'm not going to negotiate over the airwaves, but I do want to be clear about this. SIPTU will enter that negotiation with the intention of reversing the increases in state pension age, and with the absolute intention of reversing the cuts, so that people, when they retire at 65, get their state pension at 65.
Yeah. I'm interested in what you're saying there about the campaign, because it's been a really big issue in the general election with trade union members, in the media. What progress has been made to date? You mentioned a commission, but just what progress in general has the campaign made at this point in time?
Well, in last year, I suppose, in 2019, we knew for a number of years that we had to change the legislation. And last year in 2019, the people who lead our union, the shop stewards who lead our union, our National Executive Council, decided that in a general election in 2020, because we knew there would be one, we didn't know when it would be, that our union would prioritise the issue of state pension. Now, we actually have a 7-point manifesto. We're campaigning on a number of other issues that are really important to us, like housing, like fighting the privatisation of our water, the climate justice, issues around childcare. These are all significant issues for our union, but we decided to prioritise state pension because that was the tactical thing to do. So we did that, and we spent months and months and months. Organising is hard work. Planning the campaign meticulously, all of the different aspects of it. It's a comprehensive campaign, and really focusing on, I'm an organiser, that's what I do. So what I try to do is equip our members and activists to run our campaigns. It's not about the leaders in Liberty Hall or in Dublin. It's about, can we get a food production worker in Charleville, in County Cork, to activate into this campaign and make a difference? And I would say, I agree with you. We have succeeded in making it a general election issue. No one was talking about the state pension before the general election. So you know, that's, I think we've done a good job there. But the measure of this campaign for me will be the sustainability of it. I tried to do organising and campaigning that is sustainable. So for me, I measure it on, are more non-union workers likely to join our union now that we're doing this campaign? I think the answer is yes. And are we equipping our members and our activists to be the powerful union that we want to be? I think we are. So, for example, tomorrow, the man I'm thinking about, the man who gave me grief for years about this issue, he works in a food production factory in my own county in Cork. It's really in the middle of nowhere, I'd say. It's in Charleville in North County Cork. The campaign comes to him tomorrow, and our billboard will pull up in the car park of that factory, and the workers will come out, and they will do an action there. That makes me very happy.
Yeah.
I of course I'm happy that we get on the television news. Of course I'm happy we get on RT. Of course I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah.
But really, the measure for me as an organiser is, are our members all across the country active? And they are, and that's great.
It's very interesting, Etel, because when you listen to some of the media commentary around it, this issue kind of crept up from a media point of view, and they suddenly started saying, oh, it's coming up on the doors, because as soon as politicians and canvassers and so on started knocking on doors, they started hearing this, and then the media picked up that as an issue.
Yeah, you know, it's a good idea to be tactical.
Absolutely.
In your campaigning, and in political campaigning, as anyone who tries to do it effectively knows, timing is everything.
Timing indeed. And as we speak, the general election is just days away. So what can be done now by people who are concerned about the issue?
Okay, so we have a campaign website. I think that's probably the first thing that people should do, is go to the campaign website, which is www.pensionage.ie. Just go on there, find your constituency that you're voting in, and send an email straight away. As soon as the podcast finishes, send an email to the candidates that are running in your own constituency and tell them that you want to stop 67 and that you will vote for them if they guarantee you that they'll stop 67. And there's also a petition. Okay, those are some really simple things you can do in your own home, but nothing beats actual contact with politicians. So pick up the phone, ring the constituency office. If you see them, I nearly crashed my own car there about a week ago because I saw a Fianna Fáil, a candidate canvassing in my own area. So I pulled up the car, jumped out and said, can I talk to you? Yeah. This is the issue for me. I need you to get back to me within 24 hours. So, you know, feel empowered. This is not... Don't be put off that it's pensions. Sometimes people think pensions are so complicated. We want it to be kept really simple. The simple ask is, don't go ahead with 67, and say that now to your candidate. But I would say, at the risk of being overly political on your podcast, I would say this as well. The people in the Republic of Ireland will go to the polls on Saturday, the 8th of February, and people should use their vote wisely. SIPTU members are voting on 7 different issues. But for people who are particularly interested in Stop 67, inform yourself where all of the candidates in your constituency stand on Stop 67. The progressive parties, if you would like to call them that, have come on board with the campaign. But we still have not heard from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that they will definitively stop 67 and definitively enter into a social dialogue on state pension age. So use your vote wisely. Maybe they will say it before the 8th of February, but educate yourself and then vote accordingly for the candidates who you think will make Ireland a better, fairer place for working people.
Very good. Thank you very much for that, Ethel.
And Ethel was talking to us about pensions, which are really a way to provide ourselves with a decent life after work. And workers are also entitled to a decent life during work, and work-life balance is key to that. So, Gareth, over the past few weeks, we've been seeing a number of startling studies that have been published that highlight the impact of the always-on culture on everything from family life and relationships to workers' mental health. We've even seen a report this week from the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology linking burnout with fatal irregular heartbeat. And then just the other day, The Matter Private in Ireland released a report that showed us that 40% of workers that they surveyed have experienced burnout. So can you talk to us a bit about this burnout crisis?
Yeah, thanks very much, Anne-Marie. I mean, the Matter Private report that was released this week was particularly startling, probably because it's the source was, you know, established hospital and medical institution in the country, which really then highlights the crisis in mental health and work-related stress that is in many workplaces across the country. So that report said 4 in 10 workers were suffering from burnout, but also, even more worryingly, 9 out of 10 workers claim to have worked while sick, which is this sort of new phenomenon of virtual presenteeism. So even where you're off sick and your GP has told you to rest, to take some time off, people are logging onto tablets and picking up their smartphones in their bed and still checking emails. So that's really quite frightening. It kind of echoes some research we did in one of our main banks in Ireland a couple of years ago that found that 6 out of 10 workers were suffering from poor mental health and poor mental well-being in work. So I think at this stage now, the evidence really is overwhelming. There's medical reports, there's university reports, there's surveys in many workplaces across Ireland and the rest of the world that we are suffering a kind of a mental health, work-related stress epidemic. I think it's fair to say that it's the health and safety issue of this decade and of this epoch. And yet often our health and safety legislation has been written for a different period of time. It's really a trips and slips kind of approach to health and safety. It hasn't quite caught up, I think, with many of the issues that face workers in contemporary working environments, particularly office style cultures and workplaces. And so for us, as a trade union, launching the Right to Disconnect campaign on World Mental Health Day at the end of last year, 2019, was very, very important because it kind of encapsulates some of the issues that are facing workers, and that is the extension of the working week. So people might have 35, 37, 40 hours contracted in terms of their working week, but we know that they're working 5, 6, 7, 8 hours additional, whether that's checking their phones on the commute into work, you know, opening up laptops maybe on a Sunday evening just to get a head start on that Monday. And this is really extending that working week more often than not unpaid. It's rare that an employer will actually be logging those hours as overtime or as anything like on call. So it's a real crisis. And as a union, we're taking that into the general election, just like SIPTU are taking the pensions issue into the general election. We're asking our members to canvass and lobby politicians on that issue.
And you've mentioned there, Gareth, the right to disconnect. What other policies are you looking for? Because I know you've used the term before, employee-led flexibility at work. What policies are you looking for that would make things better for workers?
Yeah, we want to change the concept of flexibility, really, and get people thinking about workers first and empowering working people through creating more flexibility in their lives based around their needs. And when we hear the word flexibility, it's really been an employer-driven agenda. So you think about zero-hour contracts, you think about if an hour contracts have worked, which are appalling for working people, which provide huge flexibility for an employer to arrange their rosters based on their needs. So we want to kind of reclaim that word flexible working and make it employee-led flexible working. We want to move this agenda towards empowering workers to be able to set their days of work, their location of work, home working, hub working, going into the office, setting their shift pattern. So if they've got to do 35 hours, maybe it's convenient for them to break that in the day, but that it's very much employee-led and it's on their agenda. We think this can actually help deal with things like climate change, congestion, traffic, all of those other societal issues that we have to confront, face on as a trade union.
That's very interesting, Gareth. There, you've referenced some policies, you know, and you know, as the Right to Disconnect being one. There's also the example of what's been happening in Finland. Could you, you know, tell our listeners what's been happening in Finland in terms of some of the agenda around flexible work?
Yeah, so there's an interesting new Finnish Working Time Act, which was introduced on the 1st of January of this year. As a trade union, we've been talking to our Finnish colleagues over the last number of months about this legislation and the direction. Certainly, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's not going to be a panacea for anything. But what it does, interestingly, do is shift the setting of hours and the location of hours slightly more to the worker and to the employee, where the right to set up to 50% of your working hours in terms of when and where, so location, is now moved.
So you have a right to request hours and you have a right to request where you will work those hours.
Exactly, but not just a right to request, because that has existed in UK for legislation, for example, over the last number of years. Yeah. But this is more moving towards a right to set.
Okay.
Now, let's not be naive on this. It's not absolute, because let's say the factory that you work in shuts down at 6 o'clock at night, you're not going to be allowed to set your hours for 8 to 10. So there's always going to be some employer caveats in that. Yeah. But it certainly is beginning to shift the agenda more towards the worker being empowered to set their agenda. But there's also an interesting element as well, which is around banked hours and the ability for workers to bank hours that they work or time that they work in addition. And that means that employers who currently do have a responsibility under the Organisational Working Time Act to track, monitor, whatever way you want to put it, working hours to make sure that their staff aren't working in excess of those hours. But this is actually going to say that they have an obligation to do that so that workers can bank and then claim back those hours. So let's say you do an extra hour on a Sunday evening because you do want to get a head start on the Monday morning. You'll actually then be able to shut off for an hour during that week because you've banked that hour. So again, it looks like a good innovative approach to employee-led flexibility.
I suppose the broader question is, you know, we all have to work and we all, you know, it's a certainty in life, I suppose, and we all want to do the best that we can in work. But there has to be a balance between work and life outside of work. Have we gone a little bit too far in Ireland in terms of that balance between the two is now off?
Yeah, I do. Definitely. I think we've gone too far. And I think all of the medical research backs that up. Like I said, the evidence is really overwhelming at this stage. And it's time that we started reclaiming concepts like flexibility, organisation, and working time. You know, let's be honest, we've been on the defensive for way too long. Just as SIP2 are reclaiming some of our rights to state pensions at 65 and 66, etc. I think in other working conditions, we've got to reclaim that as well. And there is a move now, the trade union movement is stronger. I think it's more confident than it has been in the last 10 years. Working people, I think, are joining trade unions again. Again, the research is telling us that young people are getting involved in their trade union. And it is time that we started reclaiming some of things that were lost, let's say, during austerity years, whether that was in your employment with your employer or in society from governments that impose austerity measures. So I think it's great that SIP2, for example, are involved in that Stop 67. And just to say as well, you know, we got lots of calls after that campaign was launched in FSU. I got phone calls from members of mine. I got emails in from members of ours who are concerned about this issue. And I think it really works well that, you know, we've got to be facilitating people decent standard of living after retirement, but also making sure that they're not burnt out and stressed before they even get to retirement.
Absolutely.
And Ethel, with SIP2 being the largest private sector union in the country, is this issue of the extension of the working day and the work-related stress, is this an experience coming up with your members as well?
It absolutely is. We do a membership survey just to make sure that we are campaigning on the issues that matter to our members. And in the 2019 survey, actually you can see the issue of workplace stress becoming more important to people. I'm not sure why exactly that is, but it's measurably becoming a more important issue. And in our 2019 survey, a huge issue. Just to say, we are the largest private sector union. We're also the largest union and have a very large public sector membership as well. We're a general trade union. So I suppose the thing about SIP2 is, and just to go back to Paul's point about some people being surprised around the pension issue, I often think that SIP2 is a microcosm of the country, really, because we're a general union in multiple industries across the public and private sector. We're all Ireland. And when the SIP2 conference happens, like it did in October, and state pension was the big issue at it, It's a bit of a touchstone for the rest of the country, I think. But just to go back to Gareth's point, he raised young workers, and I'm really glad he did, because the media in Ireland are trying to create this kind of false conflict, intergenerational conflict around the issue of pension, and saying that that, you know, while it's terrible that somebody has to sign on the dole, are we really going to ask our children and grandchildren to pay for the pensions of these older people? And we had anticipated that backlash. But just to say, the pensions issue affects every worker of every age, because if the government gets away with going to 67 and 68, anyone listening in their teens, anyone listening in their 20s or 30s, you just watch that go to 69 then and 70. So it's really both campaigns, I think. The Right to Disconnect campaign, Stop 67, they're actually in a funny way both about the exact same thing. It's, do we work to live or do we live to work? And I think that's really touching people. And I think it's really great that trade unions are in that space and showing to working people that trade unions are active on the issues that actually really matter to them, the work-related issues that really matter. I agree with Garrett. I think there's a newfound confidence in the movement. Our union is growing, I'm glad to say. It's hard work to make it grow.
Yeah, sure.
But it is, you know, we're getting bigger and stronger, as you are yourselves getting so much stronger and campaigning so much on this issue. So it's a time to be positive, actually.
I mean, the FSU had one of our biggest years in recruitment in many years, and you can see that there is an interest, a renewed interest from people in their 20s and 30s. Just a question for both of you before we wrap up is one thing that's become very big is home working. And people maybe perhaps wanting homework, people wanting to work from home. Is there any downside to that? Because it has become a popular issue, but is there any downsides to home working? Does it have any disadvantages in your opinion, Gert?
It definitely does. So it has advantages and disadvantages, and this is often described as the paradox of autonomy. So on the one hand, you feel empowered and you feel you have more autonomy over your job because you're at home, you've got a tablet or a laptop, and you can sort of almost do some home things in between those working hours, and in that sense you feel empowered, which is fantastic. But those very same people that will score things like that highly will also say, I feel enslaved to that technology.
Yeah.
That the lines between work and family life, social life, my own life, relationships, etc., become completely blurred, and it becomes very, very difficult to separate these things out. This ultimately, unfortunately, ends in both mental and physical illnesses. It also creates relationship problems and challenges with parenting and all these kind of issues. So definitely remote working has huge potential, like I said earlier, to be positive.
Yeah.
But we have to protect and put the right mitigants in place for the downsides of it. So the kind of academic literature will always talk about work intensification. And absolutely, where you've got home working, you have work intensification. People work longer hours. They're actually a hell of a lot more productive. These productivity can be a positive thing, but we have to make sure that we protect the working week as it is now, that it's not formally informally extended, and that we protect people's mental health and well-being and family life.
Well, on that note, Gert, I think I'd so say all of us to those final points. Gert Murphy and Etel Buckley, thank you both very much for joining us on The Office Block. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe from wherever you get your podcast from and spread the word.
If you want to find out more about the issues we've discussed on the show, please head over to theofficeblock.org or fsunion.org. And thanks to everyone who made this show possible, including everyone at the FSU and here in the podcast studios. See you next time.